Welcome to the R3 Ministry Network podcast. I'm Greg Joyner, your host, and you're about to embark on a journey with us where we dive a little deeper into the heart of revitalizing, refreshing, and restoring your local church and the pastors that serve them. Together, we'll explore stories, insights, and strategies from spiritual leaders around the country and are passionate about fanning the flame of those who light up the world. So whether you're a pastor, a church leader, or just a believer hungry for inspiration, you're in the right place. Let's get started with today's episode. We are excited to have you with us today. We're equally excited to have with us Jerry Whitley, the founder of the Guardian Financial Group. Jerry, I met back at a conference back in June. I had a discussion with him about some of the things he does, and I thought, we got to have Jerry on a podcast. He's got something that is going to be of great interest to pastors and a terrific help to pastors. And so I'm not going to take Jerry's spiel. I'm going to let Jerry tell you what he does and how he can help pastors. And for many of you, this is going to be new information. For others of you, you may be familiar, but may not be taking full advantage of what's available to you. So Jerry, welcome to the podcast today. We're so delighted to have you and honored to have you with us today. If you don't mind, give us a little bit of an introduction and tell us some of the things that you offer there at Guardian Financial.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's my privilege and honor to join you today. And I share a little bit about who we are and how we got to where we are. So the beginning of my story is I was a pastor for 28 years. I chose very early in life and often regretted that decision to be a tent maker. I chose to be bivocational, even though my churches grew to where they could easily support. It was just a decision I had made early on. You may not agree with that doctrinally, or you may, but it's just a choice that I made.
I got it. I work with a lot of pastors. Now, you did that for all 28 years? You were
all
a tent maker?
Years, yes, okay. Sir. Literally never took any money from our church. I'll talk about it probably later in another broadcast, but I did overfund my tithe so I could receive some housing allowance. But other than that, I never received any income from our church. And I wondered why. But I was fairly entrepreneurial. And as a young pastor building churches and growing churches, I was also involved in financial services in a very meaningful way. At the macro and the micro level of how, you know, money is created and how bonds are made and, you know, even how companies go public, that sort of thing.
Let me hold you for a second. Is that something you got in early as a tent maker pastor? So you've been kind of exposed to this world for some time, it seemed like.
Before 9/11, I could go and you can't do it now, but you couldn't get in with a bulldozer. But before 9/11, I literally would go to New York, go to Wall Street. And I would walk down the street and talk to investment bankers. And you can't get in the buildings now, but they let me in because of my Southern accent. I literally have them saying, "Hi, we just want to hear you talk." So
non-threatening.
And I made some great friends and helped, you know, if a city was going to put in a sewer system or build some new roads and they needed a bond issue, I could help them fund that until the improvements were done. And then it helped issue the bond and get them sold and that sort of thing. So I had a lot of experience there. But then 2005, it was February the 19th, about one, a little after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. My wife had a couple of tests. She just didn't feel good. She said something was wrong. And so she had some mammograms and things, and they had come back negative. And another part of my life, I love athletics, and I played competitively. I played in basketball leagues till I was 50 years old. And so I was playing in a league with a surgeon, and his name was Scott. And I said, "Scott, my wife's had two different tests and they've come back negative, but she just feels like something's wrong. And would you just do an exploratory biopsy?" And he did. And I'll never forget, he came in on February 19th and said, "And Jerry, it's cancer and it's the worst kind." And I remember asking him, "Will she be alive 5 years from now?" And he said, "I don't know." That was his answer. And the reason it was so bad is it wasn't a tumor. It was like a pepper shaker. It was just little spots of cancer. You couldn't go in and take it out. So that, "I don't know," about 5 years from now, was almost prophetic, because it was like 5 years and 10 minutes. It was February 19th, 5 years later, a little after one in the afternoon, she passed away, sitting in my lap in our living room with my sons holding her hand. And we had worked together building churches. Both the churches we built, we started. The first church we started, there were three people, me and her and our three-month-old. And then the second church, there were six, and we grew a couple of fairly large churches. So God blessed us there. But I just didn't want to, it was just tough on me. And I went through a season where I still tried to pastor, but I didn't want to. But and so finally, when I started dating and got remarried and left the pulpit, I still felt a calling in my life. You know, pastor was my name. You could go to the town I pastored in for the last 18 years of ministry, and I could go to Walmart today, and that's been many years ago. Someone's going to call me pastor. That was my name. So to lose that identity was very tough. But I began to manage. So I'd work kind of on the macro level, but I began to manage a retirement planning firm. It mostly dealt with educators in the 403B space, and became fast friends with an executive of a large denomination. We met by accident. He's a guy that's a kind of an amateur archaeologist and was hunting for some native artifacts and had a little farm on the river. And that's how we met. And we just became fast friends. He became that counselor, almost a father figure to me for a while in my life. And I was sharing with him one day what we were doing with educators in our financial practice planning firm. I didn't own it, I managed it. And he literally put his hand over my hand and said, "Jerry, that's, you need to be doing that for pastors." And it was just that seminal lightning strike. And I said, "Yes, sir, I do." And he said, "Can you?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I understand 403B. I understand. I've been a pastor. I sort of get pastoral income and how wrong I was." I began to dig into it. I spent all the money I had left. I spent 2 years traveling around the country, learning from attorneys and CPAs. What I really learned is most of them don't know. And I just gave myself to it. So that was in 2012. So we took our first client in February of 2014, our first ministry clients. And that year we did about $6 million in retirement planning for pastors. And this year,
wow.
This year we'll do maybe 150 to 200 million. And I've got a network of financial advisors across the country, CPAs, certified financial planners, investment advisors, insurance professionals. We just built the network. And so it's been an amazing ride. And now we have ministered to thousands and thousands of pastors. I speak at conventions all over the country. Actually, I've become quite a journey. Yes, quite a journey. Yes, sir. We started cold calling little bitty churches in southern Arkansas. And that's just stopping and knocking on doors and see if anyone was there. That's where we started. And now it's, you know, God's really blessed us. And so that's a little bit of the story.
Well, that's a great story. I didn't realize that. Thanks for sharing that, too. I really appreciate that background. I didn't realize I was going to grab the emotional side of things. You had me right from the go. And I appreciate your faithfulness and your wife's faithfulness in starting churches and reaching your community and the world for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, you know, God's plans are always perfect and his ways are not our ways. So thank you for taking the next journey that God delivered to you in a way that continues to minister in a different way. So
I would interject this one thing. I do feel like it took a lot of maturity because that was, you know, over 13 years ago now. It's taken a lot of growing but to accept the fact that maybe this was God's will. Maybe her crossing over was because I feel like I'm much more effective in ministry than where I'm at now. I felt like I was a good pastor. I loved my people. They loved us. And we worked hard at it. But I feel like this is my calling, really, and kind of always has been. I just had to get here. But, you know, our calling is to help pastors. And what we do in the financial planning circles, we won't take any clients unless they're churches or pastors or they're referred to us. We have some board members of churches and things like that. We're not out seeking, you know, I live in Dallas here, and we're not out doing dinner seminars about retirement planning. We work with churches and pastors and some of the largest and some of the smallest churches in the country. But I feel like it's my calling, and like you coming in, what you said, I think it's his plan for perfect, and I didn't necessarily agree with them. But
you know, I appreciate your honesty with that, and just admitting that transition wasn't exactly on your radar, and the adjustment that you've gone through. That I appreciate your honesty with that. That's very helpful.
Yes, sir. And so one thing that we've done is we've become. And I say this, and this is going to sound a little bit coy maybe, but we tell pastors and employees of churches that don't work with us until we're not here to sell you anything. We're not here to convince you to do anything. We're here to educate you. Mm-hmm. Do not work with us or become a client of ours until you feel like you have no choice, that you've been sort of educated into a corner. And if you're comfortable where you're at after our time together, that's where you should be. But we want to teach you. And really, there's a whole lot of depth behind these three things. But really, we want to teach you how to get paid, how to retire, and how, if for lack of a better term, how to die without disinheriting your spouse. And that sounds pretty simple. But when you look out at how a minister is paid, as opposed to any other profession, it's totally different. So most CPAs, and I would say a very huge, large portion of CPAs don't understand ministers. Most tax returns I've reviewed are incorrect. It's illegal for us to give tax advice, but it's pretty easy to tell when it's wrong. And so, and we have CPA firms we work with that we've kind of taught, honestly, how to
do it. Sounds like, I was going to say, it sounds like you're almost educating CPAs and attorneys
all,
as well.
All of the time. We get calls from them all the time. And I'll get a call from a pastor CPA, said, well, Jerry, this is wrong. And I said, no, sir, it's not. And let me show you. And he'll call back. And some of those guys have become referral sources where I refer. And I have a lady right now
working
in Louisville, Kentucky, and sending a lot of pastors to her because I educated her, and she's loving it. But so, yeah, we understand the rules. But, you know, when you're working, if I could use the King James Version here a little bit, but housing allowance,
sure,
wheel in the middle of the wheel. You know, and everything a minister does, and in retirement, it's even more important. But while you're working, housing allowance is the foundation of a minister's income. And there are some big reasons for that. And the biggest reasons are it's free of federal and state tax. So I say in my seminars, if there's two shelves at Walmart and one shelf is selling dollar bills for 75 cents and the other shelf is selling dollar bills for $1.25, which shelf are you going to buy your dollars at? And that kind of is a definition of what housing allowance is, because we're able to purchase our home and all the improvements of our home with pre-tax dollars. So what does that mean? What is housing allowance? It's everything it takes to operate your home except for clothing and food. And we maybe should do another one of these and just talk about housing allowance for half an hour or an hour. But
yeah.
And there's three rules associated with that. It can't exceed the fair rental value, and you have to have the resolution in place. We spent years perfecting those resolutions, and it cannot exceed the actual expenses. It's the least of those three numbers. And so we built worksheets that we give for free to pastors to help them really understand how housing allowance works. But if it's free of federal and state tax, it can be up to 100% of your income if you have the expenses. So some part-time pastors that are clients of ours, literally, their income is federal and state tax free because they're using it as housing allowance, part-time music director, youth pastor or something. So that understanding housing allowance while you're working and what it really is, should I pay my house off or not? We see many pastors, instead of contributing to their retirement plan, they're accelerating their mortgage. And that's a double disaster, really, when you look at the math.
So that's one of the things you'll make some documents available for our listeners. And that's one of the topics that we'll dive into as we have a future episodes to talk with you about. If you don't mind, Jerry, give us a little bit more about your organization, a little bit about the basics of what you do, but then some things that we can look forward to talking about. I know you had sent me a sheet that I will make available to our listeners as well. Some of the top things that you cover with your organization that would be very helpful for pastors, and hit it at the high spots, and we'll get a little more detail as we look forward to future episodes.
So in college, we didn't have the internet, you know, back in the dark ages. But my roommate got his cat ordained through.
Seems like the dark ages today. It wasn't even that long ago.
So my roommate got his pet cat ordained through the mail. So it was a joke. But we can call ourselves a minister, but what does the IRS call a minister? I think that's very important. And I think in a lot of churches, people are qualified and don't know they're qualified as a minister. Being a minister gives you great tax advantages more than any profession I know while you're working in retirement. In a lot of circumstances, it's like making 30% more money because of the tax advantages.
So let me ask one question on that topic. I think many may ask this. To get these benefits, you have to be employed or at least pastoring a church, not a nonprofit or not anything associated with those things.
So the answer to that is yes and no. So yes, you can be a part of a nonprofit, and even a chaplain in the U.S. Army can receive housing.
Okay.
So, but we have a lot of nonprofits, a lot of, you know, we have the largest Christian drug rehab in the world as a client. I mean, they're all over the country and all over the world. We do a lot of what we call it a non-steeple church. IRS calls it a QCO or non-QCO. And so churches they're non-steeple churches. We do a lot of Christian daycare, Christian universities. So, and they can receive the benefits because they are a licensed, credentialed, ordained minister performing the sacerdotal duties of a minister according to IRS Code 107 and being compensated for that. Then if you fit into that, whether you're a part of a church or a 501c3 or even your own, you're a traveling evangelist, for instance, there are things that can be done that make your opportunities within the IRS Code different than the other profession.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that. I'd look forward to more details on that as we look to the future and some other topics that you had sent to us that we'll make available.
Yeah. Well, so, kind of, you know, we have a lot of times when sometimes we'll do a breakout session at a conference and I've got 30 minutes and sometimes I have 2 hours. So when I have the longer periods of time, sometimes we have a workbook about the 5 mistakes that most ministers make. And it also, a lot of it applies to just the church employees as well. The first thing you have to understand is who is a minister. And my roommate's cat was ordained, but the IRS didn't look at him. I don't even know if it was a he or she at this point. And then is a minister employed or self-employed? In most, a vast majority of the cases, a minister is an employee. But there's this term in the IRS code that's sort of unique. It's called dual status. And this is the thing where we see a lot of mistakes is a minister is an employee. He gets a W-2 from his church. So the IRS looks at him as an employee, but the Social Security Administration looks at him as self-employed, and that's called dual status. And if you use a payroll company like, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but if you just use a payroll company that's not accustomed to working with ministers and they're withholding the employer's portion of the Social Security, the FICA, then that makes that housing allowance illegal. Because a minister has to pay both sides. He has to pay the self-employment tax, the SECA tax. And that's 15.3% in Social Security and Medicare. So we see a lot of times a minister has housing allowance and then a FICA line on his pay stub, and that's illegal. And I see it a lot, more than half the time, in independent congregations especially. And so that needs to be fixed, and we fix that. We don't charge anything to help them solve that, fix that. But because a minister has to pay both sides of his Social Security, you see about maybe a third of the ministers across the country have opted out. A minister has a unique opportunity that other professions don't. He or she can become a conscientious objector to public insurance. What does that mean? Well, it means that you can opt out of Social Security, but you also opt out of Medicare. My experience, and I don't want to offend anybody, but I will in the next statement I'm going to make. It's not my intention. But my experience is most people that opted out of Social Security didn't know they did or didn't know what they were signing. They were just told by a seminary professor or an HR director at a church. And in my experience, that's a disaster. And I've had 65-year-old pastors call me and said, I can't get Medicare. Well, no, you can't. You opted out. Well, I opted out of Social Security. No, you opted out of all. You became a conscientious objector to public insurance. And the real truth is I've never met a real, true conscientious objector. But I've met a lot of ministers that opted out.
Well, you're speaking to many that we know are in that situation today, or they're going to be confronted with it very soon. And it is an element of, and I know it shouldn't be, but reality says it's an element of worry for them. So it'll be a terrific topic when we get to that and expand on that a little bit more. You also talk about housing allowance. You talk about some tax advantages. You talk about some things for Social Security. You also get into retirement and some other big things to talk about as we look forward to it.
Yes, sir. So to finish the Social Security discussion, we can help them get enough quarters of contribution and non-ministry income, and we'll charge for that. So if you opt out of Social Security, it's not the end of the world. We can help you, and we're not going to charge you to help.
So there is hope.
there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it is not an oncoming train. So yeah. We can help with that. So, but yes, sir.
Jerry, just to interject on that, some of the things that we do at R3 is we minister to churches that are in need of revitalization. And what we've discovered, and I'm sure you discovered this long before we did, that a lot of pastors that are in that situation you just described, they opted out of Social Security, then therefore they have, many of them, no retirement, really nothing to fall back on. And at a time in their life that they really would have been better for them, health-wise and other reasons, to transition and continue to minister, just minister in a different way, they stay because of a paycheck that's very much needed. And what we have run into is that church starts to decline.
It's an epidemic. It's not just occasionally.
I was hoping you wouldn't use that word, but I know it's got to be.
And I can start crying literally talking about it. Now, I talk to ministers in that situation every day. I talk to churches that are dying, ministers that are dying. I would say that the IRS code is very unique and there are opportunities. I talked to a 63-year-old pastor, an independent church, a very large church, and the church budget was healthy. And so, and we've met with, many, many church boards or compensation committees or trustees and like, okay, you want to transition to the next pastor. You probably don't want him pastoring when he's 80 years old or 85 years old. And he probably doesn't want to be, but he can afford not to be. So maybe instead of funding another project, maybe the next project we need to fund is our minister's retirement. And because a church retirement plan is so unique and it's a non-ERISA plan and we can do so many things in that deferred compensation plan we can't do in any other plan that we're aware of in the country. This year, under certain circumstances, a minister could put up to $73,500 per year in his retirement plan. Now, that's most churches, that's unreasonable. But for some churches, hey, if we're going to transition, I would rather go ahead and, hey, he's given the best years of his life to this church. And we haven't taken, I've had church members break down in tears and our board members in meetings. So we didn't know we weren't, and we don't know what to do. Tell us what to do. We help them there as well. But you just nailed the whole reason I'm doing what I do is to, and what if you lived in a parsonage, you didn't have a retirement plan and you opted out of Social Security and Medicare, where are you going to live?
Yep.
And, you know, what are you going to do for health care? And so
I wish that was isolated, but as you have told us, that's not. And you used the word epidemic, and that's a sad word, but it's a real word that we would apply here. Jerry, you've been terrific on this overview. And I got to tell you, we're going to end it today. We're going to wind it down because I really wanted this to be an introduction of what's going to come in the future and look forward to making each one of these available as we have more interviews. And you can talk more in detail of how you can help pastors and churches around the country. I know that's your heart. It's our heart as well at R3. And so I'm excited that God's connected us. I'm excited of what you're going to be able to do to help pastors that listen to us and that we're connected with in the future that may not be aware of you and may not be aware of these options. So thank you so much for being here today. We look forward to future episodes. I'll make these documents available. I'll make your contact information for your organization available on this podcast and future podcasts as well. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for helping us get the word out, sir. And if we can help anybody anytime, please feel free to. We have a whole staff of folks here in our office. Reach out. We're here to help you. God bless you very much.
Terrific. Thank you so much for joining R3 Ministry Network podcast today. Delighted to have a special guest with us, Jerry Whitley of Guardian Financial Group. Looking forward to future episodes where he's going to tell us some more ways that you can get help financially and have a better idea how to use some tax advantages that work for you. You may not, and likely many are not aware of. Thank you so much, Jerry. God bless you. Thank you to our listeners.
Bless you.
And that wraps up another episode of the R3 Ministry Network podcast. Thank you for joining us on this mission to renew the passion and purpose of the local church. Remember, we're here to fan the flame of those that light up the world, and together we'll shine brighter than ever. If you've been inspired, please consider sharing this podcast with others. And don't forget to subscribe for more heartwarming stories, expert insights, and transformative strategies. Until next time, keep shining and let's light up the world together.